It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
The Ebola death toll climbs to nearly 5,700. Another Sierra Leonean doctor reportedly infected. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization now says nearly 5,700 people have died from the Ebola epidemic in 8 countries. The bulk of the fatalities still in those 3 West African nations of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. At a Freetown news conference, the UN's point man on Ebola in Sierra Leone, Amadou Kamara, acknowledged a lot of work remains to be done to contain the outbreak.
There are many more things that we have to do. We have to make sure that the quarantines are effective. We have to make sure that we keep still educating people a lot about what they can and cannot do. We still believe that people are engaging in practices that are not necessarily conducive to breaking the transmission. So although the beds are the most physical manifestation of where we are short.
A 9th doctor in Sierra Leone has reportedly become infected with Ebola. 7 have died. President Ernest Bai Koroma has introduced emergency Ebola legislation and threatened another nationwide lockdown. In Guinea, President Alpha Conde threatened to use force against those who won't be treated. One piece of good news, in Guinea, as people become aware of ways to prevent Ebola's spread, the number of cases of cholera has fallen dramatically. Julien Labas is a UNICEF official in Conakry.
Cholera is a waterborne disease. The fact that a lot of sensitization and campaign awareness about hand washing was launched this year because of Ebola may contribute also to reduce the cholera transmission.
French President François Hollande will visit Guinea Fratay, the first by a French leader since 1999, with the goal of delivering a message of solidarity against Ebola. This is VOA News. The UN Security Council has expressed renewed concern over the deteriorating situation in Libya and its impact on regional peace and stability. The 15-member council said there is no military solution to the crisis and condemned the escalation of violence. It also voiced full support for Bernardino Leon, the special UN representative in Libya, urging all parties to engage constructively with efforts to resume an inclusive political process. The Associated Press reports another attack by suspected Boko Haram militants in Nigeria, this time in 2 villages in northeast Borno State. It says at least 20 people were killed Monday in attacks on Kamtahi and Galtamari near Chibok, the town where more than 200 schoolgirls were abducted in April. Meanwhile, the country's currency, the Naira, touched a record new low Wednesday against the U.S. dollar, a day after the central bank devalued it by 8%. The World Food Program is struggling to come up with money to feed thousands of Somali and Sudanese refugees in 2 large refugee camps in northern Kenya. Here's VOA's Sharon Bain.
A lack of donor funds has forced the World Food Program to cut rations in half to just under 500,000 Somali and South Sudanese living in refugee camps in the north of the country, says Shalice McDonough, senior spokeswoman for the WFP in East and Central Africa.
The global humanitarian needs are just so enormous and have been growing so quickly that they've really outstripped the humanitarian funding that's available.
In recent days, the United States, Britain, Denmark, and Germany have stepped in to fill the funding gap. Catherine Weissner, U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration, says reduced rations in Kenya will impact not only the mental and physical health of the refugees, but their potential safety. The United States, which stepped in with $20 million to address the funding shortfall in Kenya, says it is working with UN agencies and host nations to decrease the reliance of refugees on aid by allowing them to work and grow crops. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Washington.
The Algerian military says it killed a militant involved in the abduction and beheading of French tourist Hervé Gurdel in September. His vehicle was stopped east of Algiers by a splinter group allied with Islamic State militants. An Egyptian court Wednesday sentenced nearly 80 teenagers, some as young as 15, to between 2 and 5 years in prison for joining protests demanding the return of ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi. Authorities have engaged in a crackdown against Morsi supporters since his July 2013 ouster. Congolese Dr. Denis Mukwege Wednesday received the European Parliament's Sakharov Rights Prize for helping thousands of gang rape victims. He called for an end to the use of rape as a weapon of war, calling it one of the biggest humanitarian catastrophes of modern times. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon security forces free 16 hostages kidnapped in the Central African Republic.
The head of state has given the instruction to the Minister of Health to put at their disposal what they need in order to recover.
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's information minister. Testing of Ebola vaccines is to start early next month in Liberia and Guinea. Sierra Leone in the United States is sending medical supplies back to his home country to combat Ebola. And two breakaway formations rejoin Zimbabwe's opposition MDC party.
I think that what we need to understand is we aim to create a party that is predictable, definable, controllable, manageable by participating and putting in place institutions to strengthen our democracy.
Sikai Holland is interim president of the MDC renewal team and will examine excessive police use of force and racial violence in the United States. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon says it has freed 16 of its citizens and a Polish Roman Catholic priest who were kidnapped in neighboring Central African Republic. The kidnappers had wanted to trade the hostages for one of their leaders and 10 others detained in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Cameroon State Radio said Wednesday that defense and security forces had freed Matthias Jedzik, a Polish Catholic missionary kidnapped by heavily armed men from the Central African Republic on October 12.
Ce communiqué de presse qui arrive de la présidence de la République, le président de la République...
The announcer says the president of Cameroon is informing the national and international community that a special operation of Cameroon military has led to the liberation of the Polish clergy kidnapped in the CAR and 15 Cameroonians seized from the eastern border with the CAR. Jedzik was a missionary in the Central African Republic but fled violence and sought refuge in Cameroon. He occasionally returned to the CAR until October 12, when assailants kidnapped him and 15 Cameroonians to press for the release of Abdoulaye Meskin, who was arrested last year in Cameroon alongside 10 of his fighters. Meskin, who leads a group called the Democratic Front of the Central African People, fought the CAR government with Seleka rebels who overthrew President Francois Bozizé in March 2013. After falling out with the Seleka and a rival anti-Balaka militia, he fled to Cameroon. It is suspected that Cameroon paid ransoms to secure the hostages' release. Meantime, Meskin and his 10 fighters remain locked up in a Yaoundé prison. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Cameroon's information minister says President Paul Biya has ordered the health ministry to care for the 16 hostages freed from neighboring Central African Republic. Issa Chiroma says the hostages were freed in a Cameroonian army operation. He said a ministerial delegation that visited the captives at the Cameroon General Hospital in Yaoundé found them in poor condition. Information Minister Chiroma tells reporter Peter Clarty that President Biya used a combination of tools to win the hostages' freedom.
Well, we were four ministers sent to the General Hospital to meet the former hostages. There were 16 of them, including a priest. As far as their health is concerned, I can say that, okay, apparently they are looking good, although completely worn out, completely exhausted, completely starved, because I guess that they spent a good deal of time without having opportunity to have even a single meal. That's why, when you see them, completely desperate. And the head of state has given the instruction to the Minister of Health to put at their disposal what they need in order to recover.
How was Cameroon's army able to achieve this feat? Is this part of the government's effort to combat terrorism?
As far as the combating of terrorism is concerned, This is a permanent commitment to fight terrorists. The head of state has mobilized the necessary troops, the necessary armament, military equipment, already put at the disposal of our forces of defense and security in the far north and the east, so that our frontier, our borders, should remain secure.
Mr. Chiroma, how secured is your border? Because there were recent attacks launched by Boko Haram along the borders with Nigeria, and some people expressed concern about that. What is your government doing about this in terms of improving security there?
What I want you to emphasize is the fact that they have never succeeded to cross the border and to come within Cameroon. They have never succeeded, and they will never. They keep always playing havoc to destroy villages within Nigeria, in their own country. But as far as Cameroon border frontiers are concerned, our military, their commitment, they are ready to give their lives to protect our borders, our frontier. They are ready to lose their lives for us to live in peace. This is their own motto. This is their own commitment. So it is counterproductive. It may jeopardize the strategy put in place by the head of state. If you want me to reveal you the strategies, what are they doing in order to curb this situation, in order to prevent them from crossing our border?
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. Two Zimbabwean opposition formations that had broken away from former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change Party announced yesterday, Wednesday, that they were reuniting. They pledged to work together to unseat President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party in the next elections. Thomas Cheripasi has details from Harare.
The MDC formation led by Walsh Mengure and the MDC renewal team today formed a new party that they are calling United MDC. Speaking at the reunification ceremony, interim president of the MDC renewal team, Sekai Holland, said they found it necessary to reunite in order to mount a strong challenge to ZANU-PF in the next elections and offer a solution to the economic problems afflicting many Zimbabweans today.
In that context of an engagement, I think that what we need to understand is we aim to create a party that is predictable, definable, controllable, manageable by participating and putting in place institutions of all the mechanisms that we put together in agreement and by consensus to strengthen our democracy.
Mure said it was also necessary for the two MDC formations to return to the founding values and principles of the opposition of 1999.
The values which along the way, as Honorable Biti said, when the struggle against Mugabe became too difficult, when it became too protracted, when it was longer than we had originally thought in 1999, some of us began to admire the tactics and the methods of ZANU-PF. We began to mimic those very things we had come together to oppose.
Mugabe led a rebellion against Tsvangirai in October 2005 over disagreements on whether to participate in the reintroduced senatorial elections, while former Finance Minister Tendai Biti also parted ways with Tsvangirai and his team after the opposition's heavy loss to ZANU-PF in last year's elections, saying the MDC needed new blood to steer its struggle for democracy forward. But independent political analyst Sidney Masamvu said all opposition forces in the country need to work together if they were to mount a strong challenge to President Mugabe and his ruling ZANU-PF party.
I think this is a very positive step in the right direction ahead of the elections. I think what we've witnessed today goes a long way that if opposition parties coalesce together, given the rupture that is happening in the ruling party, they stand a better chance of making headway and reclaiming their political space come the 2018 elections. I believe what we've witnessed today should form the basis of a greater sort of coordination and cooperation among opposition political parties in Zimbabwe.
Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 27th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Intense efforts to find better treatments and a vaccine for Ebola are moving ahead at what one researcher describes as warp speed. Clinical trials for three potential treatments will start in early December at Ebola clinics in Liberia and Guinea. In Mali, researchers are testing a vaccine and expect results from the phase one human trial in late December. Viewers and Luke has the details.
Health workers in West Africa are still struggling to get suspected Ebola patients to come forward and go into isolation at treatment units or ETUs so they won't infect others. It's been a hard sell, in part because those ETUs can't actually offer much in the way of treatment. There is currently no cure for Ebola. Clinics in West Africa can give supportive care, like rehydration therapy, to help the patient's bodies fight off the virus. But Ebola kills between 50 and 80% of those infected. However, that picture could be improving. In December, scientists will begin testing three possible treatments for Ebola at clinics in Guinea and Liberia, run by Doctors Without Borders. They will be testing two antiviral drugs, as well as a treatment using the blood and plasma of Ebola survivors, whose antibodies may help other patients fight off the virus. MSF says these trials are, quote, accelerated and mark unprecedented international collaboration. Still, MSF Medical Director Annick Antieren says don't expect a miracle cure just yet.
On espère évidemment que ce soit des traitements qui aient une vraie valeur ajoutée. Le produit miracle, ça semble.
She says any treatment will be more effective when it's given early, before the virus spreads everywhere in the body. But not all patients come in during the first 48 hours. But these trials are just the beginning. She says there are other drugs they can test. People evacuated and treated in the U.S. and Europe have been getting combinations of treatments, so that's an option as well. New Ebola cases are being reported every day in West Africa. This epidemic is far from over. Still, thoughts are already turning to the future, to the next outbreak. There is talk of ramped-up surveillance and the creation of rapid response units that could go into the bush at the first signs. The WHO has called for the development of a rapid diagnostic tool, a simple test that could give results in 30 minutes without the need of a lab. Liberia's Assistant Health Minister Tolbert Nyansua.
Unless we can get a vaccine to immunize people against the disease and eradicate the disease, it will be a disease that will always come back because we have the history in other countries in East Africa.
The Democratic Republic of Congo just beat its seventh Ebola outbreak since the disease was first discovered there in 1976. Uganda has had five outbreaks since 2000. In West Africa this year, Ebola spread in a way never before seen, on a scale never before seen. The virus reached urban areas like Monrovia. It traveled by plane to the U.S. and Europe, sparking global alarm. That alarm and the epidemic in West Africa spurred on what had been stalled research efforts. Dr. Myron Levine of the Center for Vaccine Development at the University of Maryland is working on a vaccine trial in Mali. He says it typically takes about a decade to get a vaccine tested and licensed for general use. But this is uncharted territory.
We've already kind of done the impossible. And lots of folks said, there's no way that we could go from a vaccine in August that had never been in a human being and complete dose response phase one in West Africans within a few months. They said it was impossible. Well, impossible, you can cross out that word. It's been done.
Researchers have finished injecting the last of 91 Malian health workers with a test vaccine against the Zaire strain of the virus. The 91 volunteers were given varying doses and are being monitored. Their immune responses will, quote, peak 28 days post-injection. Results are expected at the end of December. If all goes well, a larger trial testing the efficacy of the vaccine is expected to start as soon as the first quarter of 2015. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
Today, Thursday, is Thanksgiving Day here in the United States, a day that Americans give thanks for their blessings. Among those giving thanks today is Bobby Smith of Germantown, Maryland, who immigrated to the United States 25 years ago from Sierra Leone. 3 years ago, and as a means of giving back, Smith began a small volunteer organization, Hope for Lives, in Sierra Leone to help the disadvantaged in his homeland. He began by providing fishing boats. Now, Smith is sending medical supplies to help combat Ebola, which continues to devastate Sierra Leone. Viewer's Deborah Block reports.
Bobby Smith is packing medical supplies in boxes for shipment to the main hospital in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Among the items are gowns, masks, and gloves to help protect health workers treating Ebola patients. Smith has also been sending rolling beds and wheelchairs since the hospital didn't have any. His mission has become personal since two of his relatives in Sierra Leone have died from Ebola.
My people are dying. I'm just trying to help as much as I can.
Smith knows what it's like to save lives since he works on a surgical team at a Maryland hospital's trauma unit. Many of the items he ships home are donated by hospitals, including partial rolls of medical tape.
They use just a little bit of it. They don't want to reuse it, so they're just going to dump it.
Smith is being helped by volunteers at a Fairfax, Virginia warehouse belonging to the Brothers Brother Foundation, a U.S. charity that provides medical supplies to needy countries. Luke Hingson, president of the group, calls Smith inspirational.
He sees a problem and works to bring the best out of other people to solve the problem.
During the past 3 years, Smith has also jump-started other projects. Some fishermen in Sierra Leone didn't have boats, so using his own money plus donations, he bought 3 boats for them to share. His former primary school didn't have a library, so he helped build one and filled it with books. And when Smith sent over 4,000 pairs of donated shoes, he saw the eyes of school children light up.
It's like Christmas for them.
He has also handed out meals for homeless amputees living together in camps who lost their limbs during Sierra Leone's brutal 11-year-long civil war that ended in 2002. He met them at a beach where they were having fun in their otherwise difficult lives.
Because of the civil war, they got thousands of amputees without homes. Every Sunday, they have a group that comes in and plays soccer.
Smith says his organization is also helping the homeless make money.
We send tools for them to make a living because they can make pots and pans.
Smith says his efforts show that small projects can have big results, improving and saving lives.
You don't need a lot of money to help people overseas.
Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone is continuing to send medical supplies. Once the threat of Ebola has ended in Sierra Leone, the group plans to send a team of health workers from the U.S. to perform surgeries for free. Deborah Block, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
Protesters took to the streets for a third day Wednesday over a U.S. grand jury's decision not to indict a white police officer in the shooting death of unarmed black teenager Michael Brown in the Midwestern city of Ferguson, Missouri. As VOA's Chris Simpkins reports, cases involving allegations of excessive force by police have sparked racial violence in the past.
The shooting of Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, Missouri last August reignited long-standing tensions over race and policing. The unarmed teenager's death touched off days of riots and angry demonstrations in the predominantly African-American community. Sam Fullwood, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington, says racial unrest often stems from frustration among young African Americans who believe the system does not work for them.
You have racial discrimination, you have police brutality, you have economic disparity, you have housing discrimination. That breeds resentment. The reality of what happens, demanding to be heard on par with the elites in our society. That's the underlying cause.
The violence in Ferguson comes 23 years after outrage over the infamous videotape beating of African-American Rodney King by white Los Angeles police officers. Their acquittal on excessive force charges in April 1992 immediately touched off some of the worst rioting in U.S. history. The victim himself called for calm and racial harmony.
Can we all get along?
Despite pleas for peace, 55 people died and more than 2,000 were injured. Fires and looting caused more than $1 billion in property damage. Public policy expert Elsie Scott says African Americans who lash out often feel disenfranchised.
I think many of the people you find that participate in the riots are people who feel like they don't have power. And it's the only power that they have is to go out and set a business on fire that they cannot own.
In April 2001, police clashed with protesters after the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager by a white police officer in Cincinnati, Ohio. As in Ferguson, racial battle lines were drawn between the mostly white police force and the black community. Cincinnati police officer Keith Fangman says more needs to be done in the black community to change attitudes about how police do their job.
That's VOA's Chris Simpkins reporting from Ferguson, Missouri. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Tunisian teams got off to a winning start at the Africa Men's Basketball Club Champions Cup Zone 1 qualifiers in the capital Tunis on Wednesday. U.S. Monastir edged Algeria's CR Der El Beida 68-64. Then ES Rades dismissed Morocco's RI Tangier 81-58. Algeria's GS Petrolia outplayed Morocco's Chabab Rif Al Hoshelima 87-64. The Africa Zone 1 region includes Algeria, Libya, Morocco, and Tunisia. In hockey news, Egyptian defending champion Shakir tackled Ghana's trustees in the men's contest at the Africa Club Hockey Championship in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe today, Thursday. Nigeria's police machine plays Zimbabwe's eradicators and Egypt's police engage Zimbabwe's Hippo Valley. In women's fixtures, Kenyan defending champions Orange Telkom play Nigeria's Heartland. Zimbabwe's Bulawayo Athletics Club face Malawi's Genetrix and Kenya's Strathmore University play Tanzania's Twende. Turning to football, Uganda is to host a two-day symposium from the 24th of January to plan a strategy for qualifying for the 2019 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon. The Uganda Football Federation head Moses Magogo disclosed in Kampala on Wednesday. Ugandan fans are distraught after failing at the last hurdle to qualify for the 2015 Nations Cup. This pattern of last-minute heartbreaking results have been the hallmark of Uganda's campaign in at least the last five consecutive AFCON qualifiers. Magogo revealed they have invited experts from Cape Verde Islands and Ghana to come and share their experiences in AFCON campaigns. Uganda last featured in the Nations Cup when they were runners-up to host Ghana in 1978. Finally, the Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo, Egypt, that Marhaba is the name of the official match ball for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. The ball, which goes on sale at accredited Adidas retail stores across the continent next Monday, will be officially unveiled at the Nations Cup draws in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, next Wednesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nearly 5,700 people have now died from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa amid signs the spread of the virus is slowing but has not stopped. That's it for this Thursday, November 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.